With me, Major General Pat Halloran. We've been talking about the SR-71, top speeds and going fast and all sorts of exotic materials that make up that airplane. But what's the view like from up there?
Oh, the view is spectacular. But you know, one thing about the comparison of the views between the U-2 and the SR-71 is the U-2 has a very narrow, small cockpit, and so you can look closer into the airplane, and it's easier to look out both sides. The SR cockpit is quite a bit bigger, and you have the chined side of the fuselage that flares out, so you can't really see much underneath the SR. But the U-2, you could look through the drift side and see directly below, or look out at the sides. But in both airplanes, you know, you're looking at a black sky and a blue horizon and a touch of curvature, so the views are really spectacular.
I've heard people say that who have flown in the airplane that it's almost an inspirational sort of thing as you see the fragileness of the earth and the atmosphere. Did you have any feelings like that?
No, I don't think so. I think that's reserved for the astronauts.
I thought maybe you had a little of the romantic poet in you.
You mean being Irish?
Yeah, it could be. As you were going through your career, things are starting to wind down for you with the SR-71 program. How did you finish up your Air Force career?
Well, I wound up in the SR as a wing commander, and then when that tour was up, I was transferred to Guam, where I checked out in the B-52. Now, you talk about a transition from the SR-71 to the B-52, but that was only for a year, and I was just a staff guy. I had a series of staff assignments, as everybody does when you get up to the higher ranks, and I was chief of staff at 15th Air Force when I made Brigadier General, and then I was moved to SAC headquarters, where I became the Inspector General for the command, and I got my second star there. And then following SAC, I went to the Pentagon, where I was on the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and I was moved into the command and control business, which was totally foreign to me, but it was a great way to wind up my career in something totally different. And I'd never been in the Pentagon before, so thank God it came at the end of my career instead of the beginning, because I'm not sure I'd have stuck around.
You're more of a hands-on flying type guy than one to walk the halls of the Pentagon. Is that what you're implying?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Well, with your retirement, now you've got a lot of free time on your hands, correct?
Yeah.
So you've flown a lot of interesting general aviation airplanes, but were you a GA pilot at all during your military career, or did that come after?
I did. When I was flying the SR-71, I bought a Globe Swift. That was my first airplane, and I kept that for several years, and then as it went overseas, I sold it. So I didn't get into GA again until after I retired, and then I bought four or five different airplanes over the years, and I got deeply involved in general aviation and in EAA.
What's your current airplane?
My current airplane is the early model Lancair. Of course, the big boys fly the four-place 300-mile-an-hour whatever Lancairs, and they can't get insurance, but I can because I've got the little two-seater and the original kit that they came out with, which is just a small engine, 135 horsepower. But, you know, I cruise at 165, 70 miles an hour, and I got 5 hours worth of gas. So that's all I need. I love it.
You mentioned that you flew from Colorado to Rochester, Minnesota, where you have some family, you know, coming into Air Venture. Just an interesting contrast. You said a 3.5-hour flight versus a day and a half in the car, right?
Yeah, that's right. It's a pretty easy choice to make, weather permitting, that I always fly to Rochester instead of... And I always used to fly in here, but then I started landing in Rochester to visit family, and I thought, well, it's easier just to rent a car. And then I'll have a car available. So I haven't landed here now in about 3 or 4 years. But I'm a very early EAA-er. I got a 4-digit membership number.
Oh, okay.
And so I've been coming here for years and years.
And you also had the opportunity to fly some interesting airplanes with the Wathen Museum out in at FLABOB.
Yeah, FLABOB Airport in Riverside, California. The gentleman that owns it, Tom Wathen, he's very interested in building replicas of antique racing airplanes. And so he commissioned some of the people out there to build his airplanes. And The first one was the de Havilland Comet, the beautiful red twin-engine British racing airplane. And he kind of gave that airplane to me when it was finished because he knew I was hanging around with nothing to do. And so I flew it for about 5 years all over the country to air shows. I flew it up here to Oshkosh probably three times, mm-hmm. Sun and Fun a couple of times. And then he built a replica of Roscoe Turner's, one of his big racing airplanes, and that was up here. And then recently we finished the Firecracker, which is a little racing airplane that Tony LeVere, the Lockheed test pilot, flew when he was a young man. And I guess that makes Tony LeVere and myself the only two people that flew both the Firecracker and the U-2.
Amazing.
Because he was a U-2 test pilot initially. And then the latest airplane, which is here on display at Oshkosh today over at the Red Barn, is the French Quadron. And that is a magnificent airplane that was just finished last year. They shipped it over to France for the Paris Air Show, and then they shipped it back to the States. And the guys that built it out at Flabob flew it up here last week. And if you want to see a beautiful airplane, look at that little blue dynamite machine in front of the Red Barn.
Perfect. Right outside the vintage Red Barn, go down and take a look at it. It is a beautiful, beautiful airplane. Yeah. And Tom has a penchant for making some beautiful replicas. I know when you flew the Firecracker in here, that was an amazing little airplane. Yeah. And I just can't figure out how Tony LeVere got in the cockpit because he was a little taller than you are.
Yeah, I don't know how he did it either because our replica is an exact copy. You know, I sit in there and my head's bouncing off the canopy, and I don't know how the hell Tony did. I guess he sat on the floor, maybe.
Well, Pat, we appreciate you taking time to join us today. It was a fascinating little talk for the past 40 minutes, and I always enjoy hearing you speak anyway. And he was just saying he was up at the museum at the Vetti Theater today. He's doing this interview, and then tonight you're talking to the Lancair dinner. And any other speaking engagements do we have you for this week yet?
Well, Saturday morning up in the hangar in the museum, the SR-71 group is going to be assembled. There's three or four or five of us here, and we'll just have an open seminar forum with the public. And we do this all over the United States in museums that have the SR-71. All they got to do is make a phone call, and we'll all show up and have a party and run forums for weekends and things like that. So we do that a lot, and we do it every year up here, and this year it's going to be Saturday morning.
Saturday morning up at the EIA Air Venture Museum.
Yep.
Come and ask all the questions you'd like about the SR-71. You can see Pat and his cohorts. And again, we appreciate you being here and all that you do for EIA and for general aviation.
Thank you very much for having me.
I'm Steve Buss, and we are live at the Welcome Center on EIA Radio.